everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mintel, the relationship doctor, and I'm here along with my co-host, Chris Weigel. And every weekend, Chris, we're here, we're doing life together, and as always, we're glad our audience joins us.
That's right. It's great to see you again this weekend, Dr. Linda, and it's that time of year where we can look out the window and see snowflakes falling, beautiful, each one unique. You know, there's not a snowflake that's the same.
Yeah, we learned that in grade school.
That's right. Hey, I just heard that yesterday. But today we're not talking about the snowflakes you see outside. We're talking about a different kind of snowflake.
We are. We're talking about what has been labeled the snowflake generation. Now, some of you may think that's a derogatory term, but this is a term that is used in the news quite often. And what it refers to is the children or the young people who constantly seek to avoid emotionally charged topics or dissenting ideas, opinions of others, and they have a lot of trouble coping with stress. And so we're going to address how parents, so any of you parents listening or grandparents listening, and other institutions or workplaces contribute to this disturbing trend that, in my opinion, Chris, really needs to stop, and we need to make some changes. So you are going to be shocked by some of the stories you're about to hear.
It's like we've lost our common sense.
There is a consequence, I think, from all the political correctness that has gone amok over the years. And here's an example that was in the news not too long ago. The University of Connecticut's Republican group on campus. Now, I bet that's a small organization.
Probably not very many of them in Connecticut.
Yeah. Well, they invited Ben Shapiro, who is a conservative speaker and a political commentator, to speak at some event that they were putting on. Before he even got to the campus of UConn, UConn's associate vice president and chief diversity officer, Joelle Murchison, I want to say her name because I hope she's listening. She put out a campus-wide email to all the students, and here's what it said. We understand that even the thought of an individual coming to campus with the views that Mr. Shapiro expresses can be concerning and even hurtful. And that's why we want to make you aware as soon as we were informed. And before he came to the campus, the university offered counseling services to the students who might be upset at his, quote, hurtful views. And this came from the administrators, not from the students.
Unbelievable. Well, there goes free speech. So much for that.
Right.
And apparently you can only have speakers with the views that you support.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable.
It's just nonsense to me. It makes a mockery of people who really do suffer from mental health issues and need help. That just blew me away, that story.
Yeah, this isn't the first time this type of thing has happened. The University of California at Berkeley.
Well, we would expect there, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. They did the same thing in the fall of 2017. You have a quote from a memo regarding a conservative speaker coming to campus.
All right, so brace yourself because here we go again.
All right.
So here's the quote. We are deeply concerned that the impact some speakers may have on individuals' sense of safety and belonging. For that reason, support services, including counseling services, are going to be offered and encouraged. And encouraged, even. Safety and belonging.
What about the safety and belonging of a conservative student when a liberal comes to speak?
Right. Oh, I guess that doesn't count because those views can't be hurtful, according to them.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I can't even wrap my brain around this stuff and just how utterly ridiculous this is, because colleges are supposed to be a place where you can practice to think critically and to debate and to, you know, listen to diverse opinions. And if those diverse opinions aren't allowed, and this is where I'm very concerned, you are not teaching problem-solving skills. You're not teaching life skills. If you don't debate and you don't learn how to critically think, this is really scary. And, Chris, I teach the cream of the crop. I teach medical students.
Right.
And we're seeing the trickle-down of this already, even in the cream of the crop medical students.
That is scary. It sort of makes you laugh. It shouldn't, but it's
so ridiculous.
It's funny in terms of what this is teaching our young people and how to be prepared for the real world that they're going to be in. And we're talking about doctors in your case.
I know. But students aren't even expected to go to class because they're dealing with the fact that someone with whom they might disagree is going to be saying things they don't like. Now, seriously, they don't even have to go to class. I really think some university officials have lost their mind. And it's weird to me that no one in those administrations is calling them out. Well, at the University of Connecticut, administration was actually doing this.
Right.
Is this nonsense just going to continue?
Well, there's more, yes.
Oh, of course. Of course there is.
In spring of 2016, students at California State University in Los Angeles set up a, and I use air quotes here in the studio, healing space
to
deal with the trauma of having Ben Shapiro speak, because he came, you know, he came there too.
Healing space. What do they do in the healing space?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Even though the speech had occurred 3 months prior, and most of the students who used the healing space did not attend the speech.
See, now that just tells you how silly this is.
Right.
What we're saying is something is seriously wrong with the public institutions failing to protect, really, our First Amendment rights. And so we want you to know this in case your child attends one of these universities in which speech is being censored with the excuse of safety and mental health issues. So please talk to your children and your young people that are at college, and please explain to them that free speech is not dangerous. It's actually the opposite that's dangerous when speech is censored like it's being. And then encourage them to complain to the administration. And Chris, I want to make it clear that I'm not saying, Chris and I are not saying that you have to agree with conservative speakers. You are perfectly fine and allowed to disagree with what you hear on a college campus. But to not allow all sides of an issue to be presented at those institutions of learning goes against everything that the American educational system stands for. And to me, that's really frightening.
And you would say as well that it's not causing mental health problems.
Oh, gosh.
When young people hear different points of view, I mean, just saying that sounds ridiculous.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does. So, you know, hearing different views, when did that become a mental health problem?
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's actually healthy.
Right.
Are all of these young people going to go to the workforce with only people that have the same views as they do? This is what I always wonder. Are they going to just find places to work and everybody's going to agree?
Getting everyone to think the same and agree on every viewpoint, not a bad idea. That guarantees a voting block.
I wonder if that's what's behind it, really.
It is, yeah.
And, you know, it scares me how universities are pandering to these coddled young people and allowing them to really reason with their emotions. This is what this is. It's emotional reasoning. And the University of Florida provided around-the-clock counseling services to students who were offended by Halloween costumes when Halloween came.
It's unbelievable. I don't get it. I have no words. And it gets worse, Dr. Linda. One report said that Clemson University's diversity training office decided that expecting people to be on time is culturally insensitive.
What?
I'll have to think about that for a second. There's another one. Evergreen State College officials were telling professors last July to take students' feelings into account when grading. Well, I wish they had when I was in school.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. So I'm just not going to pass you on. I'm going to pass you on this because you feel bad about your grade.
Right.
We swear we're not making these up. These are actual stories in the news. Here's my favorite one. You know, these are called microaggressions. Maybe people have heard this. There's a very liberal Ohio college called Oberlin College. And the students voiced outrage over the fried chicken, over the sushi, over the General Tso's chicken, and Vietnamese sandwiches that were served in their school cafeteria. And here's why. They were saying that the cheap knockoff dishes were insensitive and culturally inappropriate. A sophomore from China told the Oberlin Review, which is their newspaper apparently, that the steamed chicken dish just did not resemble the popular Chinese dish, and that's why the student was offended. But she described it as she looked at it, it was so weird that she couldn't even try it. Now here's the kicker, Chris. General Tso's chicken is not actually a Chinese dish.
Oops.
I didn't know that.
No,
I didn't look this up.
I thought of it, yeah.
It's commonly found in Chinese restaurants, but that deep-fried ginger garlic chicken dish got its start in the good old USA. Isn't that a wild story?
Amazing.
We could go on and on, right? Because now these stories, unfortunately, these crazy stories we're telling you are reflecting the norm, and it's out of control. And so no one with sense is stopping this.
And because of this, students today are flooding college mental health centers.
Yeah, and see, that's what really, really concerns me, the lack of coping. And the question is, how are we going to help them cope with real-world problems when they leave their safe spaces on campus? So parents, employers, be concerned. Houston, we have a problem.
And luckily, we have solutions right here on the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Stay with us as we take a quick break. Dr. Linda, one of our listeners asked this question. Sometimes I'm so overcome with worry and anxiety that I think I'm losing my mind. Seems I've tried everything from drugs to meditation. Why doesn't anything work?
Well, I'm so sorry that your life seems so unmanageable and overwhelming. Too often, though, it does seem nearly impossible to live in peace and contentment because of all the craziness in our world. Did you know that God's plan for handling worry is so simple and yet so perfect that you can begin using it today? Did you know that starting right now, you can begin to cultivate a worry-free life? These aren't pie-in-the-sky promises. They're God's prescription for you to thrive and to soar past your anxiety and worries. Try this. The next time you begin to feel overwhelmed by life's pressures and worry clouds your mind with negative thoughts and depression, say what King David prayed. The Lord is my strength and my shield. Remind yourself that my heart trusts in Him and I am helped. I have so much more good news for you. I hope you'll find it in my book, Letting Go of Worry.
Thanks, Dr. Linda. Now, that's great advice. You can find God's plan for your peace and contentment in Dr. Linda's book, Letting Go of Worry. It's available wherever you buy your books online. Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Before we get back into our discussion about the snowflake generation, I want to remind you that Dr. Linda blogs weekly, and she has a free monthly e-newsletter and keeps you aware of all things about relationships on her website, drlindamental.com. And you can follow her on social media as well, Twitter at Dr. Linda Helps, and more. And I'm sure a lot of parents are listening and thinking, how do we get to the place of safe spaces, microaggressions, and trigger warnings on college campuses? And young people just don't seem equipped to deal with everyday issues and problems, Dr. Linda.
Yeah, unfortunately, Chris, I think it's somewhat the result of parenting and the way teachers have been dealing with kids at their schools. I think both of these are pretty much contributing factors. So we really have to look at what have we done to encourage this type of dependence and this lack of thinking. Have we really encouraged our kids to be independent and to take on responsibility and to think for themselves, to make decisions and get things done?
We do see a number of kids that find it hard to work on their own and make decisions, and even small things like packing their lunch and getting their clothes ready for school.
I know a lot of parents do that for their kids. Do you do that for your kids?
We have a system in place, and as they've gotten older, they have more responsibility.
So that's good, because one of the cures for this is really to have the kids do more for themselves, as they're able to handle it, of course.
Yeah.
I'm sure your son Matthew doesn't pack his own lunch at this stage. He's two?
He drives the girls to school in the morning. Yeah.
So the intent here is to be very loving to your kids, but the result of doing so much for them is what's creating the snowflake mentality that we're talking about. So, you know, when kids run into problems and we parents rush in to fix them all the time, then the kids become dependent on us or someone else to think for them.
I can think of things like when your kid says, I have no one to play with, or I don't like what we're having for dinner, or you know, I can't get myself dressed in the morning. It's easy to want to jump in and rescue them and make excuses or just do something to fix their problems.
You know, when my kids said I'm bored, you know what I said?
What's that?
Isn't it great? How's that feeling?
All right.
I just let them sit there with it. But I know that the tendency of a lot of us is to just feel that we have to do something to relieve that boredom, right?
Yeah.
A lot of my friends would say, well, we got to entertain them. And I'm like, we really don't have to entertain them. Let's have them figure it out. Because I was thinking back on my own childhood, Chris. Mm-hmm. My parents never offered to give me ideas of what to do. They just told me to figure it out.
Well, we've done that here. And when the girls say, we're bored, if you make them figure this out, you'll walk into the room and there will be this fantastic Lego creation.
Yeah.
Or some, you know, production going on with the dolls.
Yeah.
It does force them to use their little brains for things. And I know a big concern is when kids have problems at school, parents tend to rush in and deal with the teachers instead of letting the kids work this out.
That is a big one. That's a tough one for most parents, and we don't let our kids try to solve the problem first. And so I would encourage any parent, send your child back first to deal with the teacher, and then if you have to jump in, jump in. But too often, we just get right in there and fix it, and you're not teaching your child anything that way,
right.
And parents are supposed to be teachers.
You know, and then when teachers and athletics, that type of thing, give trophies for participation, and the teachers can't use red ink to correct mistakes on tests and can't discipline a kid for the fear of a lawsuit, what does this do?
It doesn't teach the child how to deal with disappointment or
right.
mistakes, you know, if they can't correct anything or failure or just understanding what correction is and how correction happens. And all these things are very needed to cope in life because they're not going to have safe spaces in their real life.
No.
So what we're seeing is a combination of helicopter parenting, lawnmower parenting. You know what that one is?
Haven't heard that one
yet.
Yeah,
mow down the obstacles. And then all these college campuses are capitulating to the wants and the desires of the students. You know, the idea has become that you are evil if you show me anything but love and acceptance all the time, which is just so unrealistic in life. We all need love and unconditional acceptance, but that doesn't mean that you do everything for your child or the student.
My sister is a coach at a college in North Carolina, and she actually has had parents call. And
I've had parents of medical students call. First of all, there's something called FERPA, and you can't talk to them.
Right.
But a parent calling for a medical student to tell me what the student needs, I'm like, hey, they're 25, 24, they can talk for themselves.
Unbelievable. It's important to teach kids to tolerate criticism and maybe let them experience a denial of their own desires.
It is. And there's an old saying, I don't know if you've ever heard this saying, but I love it. It's, as the twig is bent, so grows the tree.
Let me write that down.
It sounds very Chinese proverb,
right,
doesn't it?
Got it, yes.
So think about it. As you let a child experience some disappointment, and again, I'm not making fun of parents. I have jumped in too many times with my own kids, honestly. My kids are in their mid-20s, and I think there are things that we could have done to really push them a little bit more into the independence. So it's a natural instinct to want to jump in there and kind of rescue your kids. But let's think about their emotional growth, that when we do that, we're stunting that growth and we're beginning to see the effects of that. So we don't want to just give in and give them the kid glove treatment all the time.
Could one of the root problems be that parents are coddling their kids by reacting to feelings? They're worried that their kid might be upset and feel pain, or just not know what to do.
I do think that's a legitimate concern, that we're so tuned in now as parents to the feelings of our children, and we have a hard time often sitting and letting our kids struggle and watching them feel pain. It's hard as a parent to do that, but it's also a good way to help them learn. So if you don't do that, what happens is your child becomes incredibly insecure. They always need to have their ego bolstered in order to cope with anything, and that just is not good. It creates emotional dependency.
And you would say that the emotional dependence is self-centered.
It is, because they're not learning how to regulate those feelings and how to make decisions based on some kind of a standard of truth rather than dealing with just feelings alone. So nothing in the culture we're dealing with now is right or wrong or good or evil. It's all based on how I emotionally feel.
All right. Well, we can see the negative effects of coddling children. It's time to discuss solutions to the growing problem of raising snowflake kids. More on the Dr. Linda Mental Show after the break.
From the moment we're born, we're in relationship. At first, we depend on others to take care of us, to meet all of our needs. Then as we grow older, we make friends, we meet school teachers, later a boss at work and a spouse at home. Every relationship is important. Every relationship requires cultivation and nurturing. And at some point or another, every relationship has its challenges, and they revolve around conflict. Did you know that you can grow through conflict and become such a healthier you than you ever expected? Well, I want to help you look at conflict in new ways, to approach conflict in ways that work. My book, We Need to Talk, can help you become a better problem solver, learn to negotiate differences, and strengthen all relationships, even when conflict seems destructive. Well, let's face it, conflict is an unavoidable part of our everyday life. But conflict doesn't have to overwhelm you or destroy your relationships.
We Need to Talk, an important book by Dr. Linda Mental, is written to help you successfully navigate conflict. Find We Need to Talk wherever you buy books online. Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. And just a reminder, you can follow Dr. Linda on social media and you can go to her website, drlindamental.com. That's where you will find all of her books, blogs, and you can connect on all the social media platforms, which there are plenty, Dr. Linda.
That's right. And we like Instagram because we can put videos on there. And your videos, people love.
People like the videos more than they like the show.
they like watching you in the videos and me trying to get you in trouble all the time.
It's not hard to do. Well, we've been talking on this program about the snowflake generation, and it's time now to talk about solutions. What about when kids seem to blame everyone else for their problems? And you were telling me about a medical student who blamed you for her late assignment.
That's a great example of what we're talking about.
Wow.
It's a lack of taking responsibility and being accountable. And we have to stop reinforcing their excuses and let them get angry and learn to deal with it. No excuses. So when I just sent back a note saying, hey, it was your responsibility, it's late, I'm sure that student was not saying nice things about me in her apartment. But you know what? I would never talk to my professors the way high school and college students do today. We've all noticed this. We've noticed this in Christian schools and non-Christian schools. Mm. Teachers are constantly saying the amount of disrespect and the way students make excuses for things. Come on, parents. This is where we can really be effective with our kids. So teach your kids to stop playing the blame game and ask them what the problem is and how they're going to fix it or how they're going to learn from it, and give your children the gift of accountability. That's going to help them for the rest of their lives.
I think the point is you as a college professor shouldn't have to deal with this type of problem.
Yeah, and students. So we really have to back it up. And I don't want to sound like we're blaming parents for everything, because obviously there are kids who act out and do things they're not supposed to do, but I do think we have to be somewhat introspective in this, Chris, and look at what we've done to enable this kind of behavior. And again, I'm the first one to say, I wish I would have done some things differently and made even my kids even more responsible than they are.
Right. We're referring to this as the snowflake generation, and we know that they're not good with failure. Why do we have so much trouble letting them fail?
You know, I think the root of this is just fear, because that's usually the motivator, that somehow we want to protect them from all the negative feelings that they're going to have, or we don't think that they're going to make it somehow in life if we don't step in. And we just seem to have a lot of trouble in our culture of watching people fail, maybe because we always show the successes. The point is that, you know, Chris, very successful people talk about what they learned from failure. I mean, I think of all these inventors and people who failed multiple times, and failure usually forces you to think and then try again. So, you know, some of our greatest inventions, like I mentioned, came through failure first.
Right. Well, what about chores and responsibility around the house? That seems like a common sense approach to fixing this.
Here's one of my biggest concerns. I think kids are involved in so many activities, and I just see parents in their vans running from thing to thing. They're taxi cab drivers. You know, really, you can overschedule your kids. What's happening is those kids are so busy with their stuff and their activities that then the parents are picking up all the slack at home and doing chores, and they're saying, well, they don't have time to do chores, so they're not learning that responsibility. So again, give them clear, fair, realistic chores and responsibilities, and have them support the general household chores, like doing dishes or emptying the dish, you know, washer, or cooking a little bit, helping you alongside. This helps them, and it teaches them time management.
Well, we know the important parenting instructions from Proverbs 22:6. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And I would think that training up our kids to be more independent and to handle stress is part of that mandate.
So there's something called stress inoculation that we talk about often in the psychology world. And the idea is you give them a little bit of stress. You watch them, you kind of coach them through that, then you give them a little bit more and you coach them, and then as they get a little bit more dependent, you keep doing this, and it's like almost like getting a vaccination where you're inoculating them so that by the time, hopefully, they're in the workforce or in college, they know how to handle stress. And if you're too protective and you don't do that, it becomes a problem.
Right. Well, Dr. Linda, are there more specifics on how to combat this, what we're calling the snowflake trend?
I do think you have to sit down and teach your children and your teens how to protect themselves, Chris. So it is a good idea to recognize, you know, signs of danger, help them how to respond appropriately in situations. That's a preparation thing. I saw a television show the other night, and it was a black family, and they were sitting down, their child, and they were saying, now look, if you're ever approached by a police officer, this is what you do. It's very sad that we have to do that still in our country, but the parents were really trying to prepare the child rather than overprotect the child by saying you can never go outside the house.
Right.
So I think that's a really good strategy, that they're going to face harm in the real world, and that you have to teach them how to protect themselves.
That's true. Well, as we get closer to wrapping up the program for today, what else can parents and churches do?
It would help if in our teen and young adult groups and churches that we would encourage our kids to go out into the community and serve. So one of the biggest antidotes to being so self-centered and being kind of what we're calling a snowflake is to go out there, do some yard work, get involved in physical activities, help other people, get them off of thinking about themselves and serving others. And when you do something for someone else, you're contributing to other people in the community, and it brings a real sense of satisfaction in your life when you are doing for other people rather than always having people do for you.
Right. Well, how is a young child or a teen or even a young adult's spiritual development tied to this?
You know, we have to grow emotionally, we have to grow physically, but we also need to help our kids develop spiritually. And that's why Christian leaders really need to be on the front lines of helping young people transition into this, you know, immaturity that we are is normal and natural, but growing up to be able to handle things. And certainly our faith is important in learning how to handle life. So the maturity of faith really depends on the maturity of a person's life. So the church should be a part of this.
And in the end, giving kids everything they want does not make them happy.
It doesn't. It makes them entitled. Mm. They just want more. There is no work. There's no sacrifice. There's no struggle or pain when kids get everything that they want. So when reality hits, many are shocked to find out that people are not helping them out or even giving them the time of day. And that's a shocker for a lot of young adults when they get into the real world. The point is, you can't have a healthy relationship when you're so used to being catered to for your every whim.
Right.
If we continue to be so risk aversive as a society, we're going to have millions of adults who cannot handle their own lives, and that's going to be a scary thing. So here's the bottom line. Give your kids the opportunity to fail a test. Don't argue with a teacher in order to inflate your child's grades. Give your child the experience of not getting everything he or she wants, and let your kids work for rewards. If you give your kids the opportunity to hurt a little bit, because it's the only way that that child's going to learn and deal with disappointments later on in life, you're really helping them, not hurting them. All of this helps to build their independence and not make them dependent on others. So we hope you got a few ideas here where you as a parent or a teacher or a family member can sort of correct this move to this snowflake generation. We want to build healthy, strong families with kids who can cope as young adults. That's all the time we have for today. Many thanks to our social media director and producer, Norm Mintel, our engineer, and my co-host, Chris Weigel, who makes this show a conversation from all of us here at Faith Radio. We'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone. Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.